You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to probably the most, sorry to say this, disappointing Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers, which means the other co-host joining me on the other line right now to just get livid and angry, and we can yell at this game for 10 minutes and then maybe get a little positive, is Tony East from 8.9 Seconds and everywhere else.
Adam, this episode is so disappointing because you're hosting it.
Why? Explain yourself.
With a little banter before we scream at each other for forever.
Well, so Tony and I took a nice 30-minute debrief after the game to calm down, let our nerves down, not or whatever, our anger, frustrations. And the first thing I want to start with is getting them right back going, and that is, why the bleep, I'm not going to cuss, why did Victor Oladipo not play the entire second half? Why did he sit the first 2 minutes of that fourth quarter where the Pacers' two-point deficit ballooned to a nine-point deficit, and they lost the game in those 2 minutes? LeBron was not in the court for the first 5 minutes, and if Oladipo started the fourth quarter, they had a chance to take the lead, put the gas to the Cavs, force LeBron back in this game when he was clearly exhausted, and that's where they lost this series. And for all the positive David Miller has done this year, even in this series, he's made some nice adjustments at times. That was the most boneheaded thing I've seen, and I am just pissed about it.
I think that was the worst rotational decision he's made in the whole season. So, Adam, LeBron was a minus two in this game. That means in the 43 minutes he played, the Cavaliers were outscored by the Pacers, which also means in the time he wasn't in the game, they were plus six, which was just the start of that fourth quarter and the last minute of the third. Without LeBron, Nate decided to leave Victor Oladipo out, which gave the Cavs an opportunity to take the lead in a time where they should have been at their worst, and that's the difference. That's why they won.
No, and they should have taken that 2 point deficit going in the fourth and been able to make that a 5 point lead.
Because the doors off of them.
No, and you see what Ty Lue was doing, which was great coaching by him. Good coaching by him was that they had a lead. He's like, I'm not going to put LeBron back in this game, who clearly is exhausted, until I have to. But he just cut it to, I think, four or six. Then he put him back in. Like, he waited until he had to put him back in. I think LeBron made a decision about that, but still, they waited until that last moment because they said he was cramping. And the fact that the Pacers couldn't take advantage of that is ridiculous. And I said on Twitter, I think on Friday, I'm of the belief the Pacers could beat the Cavs even if LeBron scored 50, because that's how bad everybody else is on their team. And they would have beat the Cavs without LeBron on the court, and they did. And the fact they weren't able to capitalize off the court is ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. And that stretch was weird because, like, there weren't any creators out there for the Cavs. Somehow George Hill and Kevin Love were getting going in those random situations. And that's because the Pacers didn't have their best defensive player on the court. And Victor was a plus in this game. Like, there's just no reason he shouldn't have been out there at all. And even in the first little minute section, Collison wasn't even in there. They had no shot creation at all. It was a disaster of a lineup. And it was just a huge indictment on Nate McMillan's decision-making in that instance.
So in game 5 and 6, what bailed out that lineup was the fact that Sabonis had been playing so well. Yep. This was the game where Sabonis didn't play that well. I mean, it's what it was. He was 3 of 10. He didn't have a terrible game. I wouldn't say it's like was a just a non-play, but he didn't have a great game shooting. That's what bailed out their team on offensive, at least on the offensive side, when the bench guys came in. But he should have saw that Sabonis was struggling to shoot the ball and put Vic in, because Vic was rolling on a hot hand. Vic had an awesome third quarter. Vic was just rolling. I mean, everything was going for him. He was getting to the lane and scoring. He was getting fouled. He was hitting his 3 points, shot. I think he hit 2 threes in the third quarter. He was feeling himself. And the fact that they let that kind of go away is super annoying, because you would think, you know, last time the Pacers were in a game 7, they did the same thing. They 2 years ago against the Raptors, Vogel rode his bench too long when they had a lead going into the fourth quarter. They blew it, and Paul George should have played the entire second half, and he didn't. And Paul George said that, and he was pissed, and that should have been something they should have learned from. But of course, they didn't, and they lost this series. And really, they were the better team. The Cavs had the best player, but the Pacers were the better team.
They did. They absolutely played better than the Cavs in the series. What was it? They were plus 40. I mean, even if that's deceptive of their blowouts in game 6, or their blowout in game 6, they outscored them by 40 in the 7 games. They really showed that they can compete with anybody, and they even dominated, you know, with LeBron in, with LeBron out. They just made some questionable rotation decisions and couldn't close out a close game except for game 3. So that's really all it came down to.
Yeah, the Pacers have played the Cavs 11 times in the playoffs. In the past 2 seasons, they've lost all 8 games by a combined 30 points. That is coaching at the end of the day. That's coaching.
It is.
It's nothing else to it. It's, you know, yes, you understand I understand they're not going to go 8-0 in those kind of close games, but they should be 2-6 games. They've won. They're 1-8 in games decided by one by four or less points against the Cavs. They should win all those games.
Yes, they should. Not all of them.
Not all of them. They should win half of them. Sorry, half. Yeah. And maybe you lose one because LeBron is awesome.
Should be closer to 50-50 than to zero.
Yeah, exactly. And it's ridiculous. And, you know, you just hope McMillan learns from this somehow because he's going to be their coach next year. Overall, he had a fantastic season. The guy's bought into his system. His, you know, the player's chemistry is a little bit of what he did. Like, he contributed to that, sure, with his coaching style and probably the way he had them practice. Stuff like, that. Like, he definitely did a really fantastic job with this team all year. But it's what happens is he's like, I made it now before, he'll get you 50 wins. But when it comes to playoffs, he just doesn't make the right call at the right minute. And it was just frustrating. I mean, you can talk about the refs, all the stuff, but that fourth quarter, I think, where they lost the game, where they didn't play Vic. That was it. That was the moment where they decided they weren't going to win the game, basically.
Yeah, he really punted on that fourth quarter. And yeah, you nailed it. You know, he's kind of good at player development, or he's pretty good at player development. He makes some good rotational decisions occasionally. But when his rotational decisions are bad, he doesn't have any other skills that are redeeming enough for him to be good enough to win them games like that.
But the problem is that there's not an upgrade above him available, right? I mean, like, it's not like you're not getting Brad Stevens, you're not getting Quinn Snyder, you're not getting Pop. Yeah, but you're not – I would be surprised. I mean, they're not going to fire. I'm not even going to start that.
No, he's not going anywhere.
But is Budenholzer really, like, that upgrade of him, that big of an upgrade? You might think is you're a big Popovich disciple kind of thing like that, and you, like love Popovich to death, I think, in a weird way for a non-San Antonio fan. But sorry, that was kind of mean.
That's okay.
But – I know, but, you know, it's just frustrating because you knew it too. At the third quarter, I'm like, there's no way you don't play Vic, right? I mean, LeBron's going to play the entire game. No way you don't play Vic. And then he wasn't on the court. And it's like, it's just like, I want to just go there and just like start screaming at him, play Vic. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think it's sad that literally everyone watching knew that problem right away. Like, everyone agreed that was the wrong call, and yet they still did it. And these guys have more information than us, so you want to say, like, okay, you give him the benefit of the doubt, but, like, it seems just too obvious even to go with what he did.
Yeah, and I think we beat this kind of into a topic into the ground. I think everybody agrees with us. Talk about the officiating probably for a second, and the fact that I don't think it was good on either side. It was just bad officiating the entire game, I thought. Like I don't think he was, like, favorable to anybody. I think there were some tic-tac fouls called on Turner. There were times that LeBron was flopping at times, but there were also times that they were calling things on people getting tapped or not offensive fouls or whatever. But a couple of the flops by LeBron, too, were really frustrating, and it's just the officials were just getting milked by these players, basically.
Yeah, it was sad the whole game, really. Like, Turner fouled out. They were so ticky-tacky. You know, there were a bunch of undeserved free throws, really, for both teams that – we talked about that sequence before the game where there was a foul on Collison shooting and then a foul on an offensive rebound. And then LeBron ended up getting a defensive rebound and he turned into Sabonis, and Sabonis was in an illegal guarding position and got knocked over and they called on LeBron. It was a very odd moment. And that was the one that kind of encapsulated everything for me, where they just seemed lost, right? Like, they could not keep up anything. And it was very odd.
Well, what happened, I think is happening, honestly, is this was one of the more chippy games. I mean, the Pacers and Cavs play a little more of like a gritty Midwestern battle. I don't know. It's something that we always have with the Pacers. They're kind of a team that fights teams and not afraid to get in your face and hit you on the extra end. I mean, Dave West used to be that way. Jermaine O'Neal, Artest. I mean, this Pacers team has always had that identity of being just a little bit dirty, but not like over the top dirty, but willing to be a little more pushy and shovey. And the refs just didn't know how to call because the Cavs were responding. I mean, Tristan Thompson was fighting guys. JR is one of those guys who will keep fighting too. And they didn't know how to respond, because in today's NBA, it's like anything that's kind of a foul should be called a foul, where they don't let the guys sort of fight it out almost. And that's where you sort of saw this trouble, is the refs are like, well, do we call this? Or like, if LeBron slides halfway down the court because he pushes himself off of Bojan, that's a foul, right? On Bojan. There were just so many things. And the officials just literally were not trained to take on to view or call this kind of contact.
Tony Brothers is not very good. He should not ever do a game 7.
No, he shouldn't. And it's frustrating because
the whistle happy guy, and game 7s are not the place for that.
I'm trying to remember the play now, but there was one play where the foul, I think it was the foul on Miles Turner, where he got called on J.R. Smith. If that's not called a foul, that's a 3-point game. Yeah. It went from a 6-point game to a 9-point game. It was a 6-point swing.
I thought it was a foul on Turner.
So if you watch it, JR is like, they're fighting for position. It's not like Turner throws JR. They're fighting each other for position, and Turner gets called for what is probably a ticky-tack foul where you could probably call it on both players.
Yeah, it swung the game, but I thought it was a foul. It was just ticky-tack. I agree with you, it was ticky-tack, though.
Well, it's the same thing. Like, I don't know if Patriot fans remember, but 2 years ago when Paul George got called for an offensive foul on a three-point game driving to the rim on DeMar DeRozan, and like it was not offensive, like it was so ticky-tack offensive foul. It's kind of thing where it's like you're basically deciding the game right here when you just swallow your whistle and let them play.
Yeah.
Because like even if the Pacers get that shot and make it a three-point game, it's not like they're giving the game to the Cavs, but by calling that call, you are giving the game to the Cavs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if they're giving the game to the Cavs. I just
No, you are. You swing it from a 3 to a 9-point game. Like that.
That's what happened, but that wasn't like what the goal was when they call that.
I understand, but like it's the kind of thing where I don't understand how you call where both guys are pushing each other.
It's easy to say retroactively what happened, but not what the, you know, I think they just saw that Turner, the huge dude Turner, reaches his arm and pushes back J.R. Smith's shoulder and gets the rebound.
But like they also aren't trained. They think the Cavs don't ever, like the Cavs flop literally all over the place.
Miles Turner was flopping too.
Everybody was flopping, but some of the most egregious ones are by the Cavs. LeBron had some pretty ones where he sold the contact like it was nobody's business.
Yeah.
Where he wasn't even hit and he would sell contact. Like,
it's annoying. He's the best in the league at it, and it is really annoying.
But, yeah, it is. It's really annoying.
But it's a skill too.
Yeah. You always say that, and I hate when you say that.
Why?
Because it's a skill, but like the refs, then if it's a skill, the ref should be trained to be able to say, to not call everything for LeBron. If he flops, there should be some kind of thing where it's like, well, if guy flops, let's say they catch him flopping 10 times in a season, he should not get the benefit of the doubt by a ref. The ref should be like, well, no, you're flopping.
I don't think he's flopping. I think he's acting. Like, flopping to me is when you're not even hit.
No, but the Bojan foul on LeBron, where LeBron came across, got his arm with Bojan, and then pushed off and slid across the floor.
Does every NBA player have that skill mastered? I've tried to do that where you're butt sliding on the floor and you push with your arms to keep going, and I just don't move.
I think it's because you're not as athletic as the NBA players.
they time it so well, so right before they hit the ground, they push it off with their arms, and they skid like 10 more feet. When I do it,
yeah, I know.
And it hurts.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. And
random NBA
I do think that – I do one thing we should talk about is the fact – that when George Hill came in, it did kind of change the game for the Cavs because they ran Collison into that pick and roll and tired him out. They just exhausted Collison.
They did George Hill, Kevin Love pick and roll over and over and over and over. George Hill played 19 minutes and was second on the Cavs in assists. Like, he only had 3, but that's still crazy to think about.
Yeah. I mean, so then we talk about Kevin Love too, who somehow stood up in the fourth quarter. I mean, he hit some big shots.
Yeah.
Huge ones. But I just thought
– really the four.
I just thought the George Hill move was what changed the game. And I thought it reeked of desperation, but then it worked.
He was a +5 and a 4-point win, and he only played in the second half. You know, that tells you all you need to know.
Well, no. And I'm just saying when they kept running Collison into the pick and roll, Collison was having just a – which was feasting on offense. I mean, he was just – the first half, I think he had 17 first-half points, I want to say. I mean, he was having a great game. He had 6 second-half points. Now – part of that is because Depot got hot, whatever. But Collison was sort of like not having to play defense and could just kind of sit around and then just running on offense really well. But by putting George in, you forced Collison to use more effort on the defensive end, and then it kind of drained him. And you saw that because Collison missed a really big three. They were down 6. He had a corner three to make it a 3-point game, and he missed it. And that part of that was probably exhaustion, a little bit of it at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
exhaustion was a lot of it. The Cavs kind of – their weird rotation actually really ended up working in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, the Thompson thing obviously worked in their favor, although I think
– he was amazing.
Yeah, and I think part of that was Turner had to fight for rebounds all series because he hadn't had – I mean, he was bigger than everybody else. Thompson just started fighting him for rebounds, and it was like another desperate move by Lou that worked out because it was like you needed some kind of rebounding spark. And I thought for sure – what the problem was they didn't counter with any good Turner offensive plays when they should have been able to.
They didn't counter with any Turner at all.
Turner had 3 shots. That was bad. But that wasn't always Turner's fault. That was people not passing him the ball fault.
Yo, for sure. Well, he never – like the foul trouble really hurt his opportunities to get into rhythm too, which seems like a theme for him. But, yeah, he never got opportunities in this game. He had more foul shots than actual shots, which is just nuts.
But I'm also wondering why they
– team high +10, and he barely even shot.
I'm wondering why he never – they didn't really run in the series that much. The – the pick and pop with Turner. I mean, it was like, it was somebody who was running like five times the whole series where he should get that like 15 times, especially against the best Cavs team.
Yeah, definitely. They didn't run it like hard. Did they run it at all after the first quarter? Like,
he got 1-3 to start second half. He shorted it. I remember that.
That's right. Yeah, it was really odd how they were using it. But then Sabonis would come in, he was getting plenty of touches, yet he wasn't even finishing well in this game.
No, Sabonis had a bad game, and he had three great playoff games, so I can't knock him too much because he had three great playoff games, but it stinks because if he goes 6 of 10, they win the game.
Why was Lanta minus 19?
Because he played in that fourth quarter the fourth quarter stretch where they let up 8 points in the second quarter. Lance was bad.
Play that bad.
Lance was bad though. I thought he had a couple of threes, but that was it, or a three.
Yeah, I didn't think he was minus 19 bad.
Yeah, I mean, when LeBron aside, he was just gonna post everybody up and score. Yeah. Nobody can stop him, and it was just like, let it be, let him do that. And it sort of just kept working.
All those doubles in the post were frustrating because they weren't getting baseline side, which is like when you have a guy with his butt to the baseline and then a guy between the man and the basket, right? Well, they'd have a guy come up from the top of the key, and then they wouldn't get a guy with his butt to the baseline. So LeBron would just spin towards the rim and either A, immediately have an open look, or B, the help would come and they'd get a wide open three from it. It was very frustrating.
Yeah, so can we just hit this for a minute? Did you think the game plan to let LeBron – basically the game was let LeBron go one-on-one on everybody – I think that kind of worked.
I do too. No one else besides Tristan Thompson played like so good.
No, and LeBron was exhausted by the second half.
Dead.
You could see it. He was just dead. By mid-third quarter, his body was dead.
Cramps.
Right? I mean, that worked. The problem was I still think they just didn't take advantage of when LeBron was off the court, which goes back to the fourth quarter thing. But the
stretch was like the season-altering stretch.
Yeah, but, well, it was. It literally was the reason winner-go-home stretch. But I did think, though, that was – and I partially thought, if I'm LeBron, I thought LeBron was thinking, like, man, this Pacers team is so much better than me. Why am I playing for this crappy Cavs team? I think he might have thought a couple of times. Like, literally, he tried the first quarter to pass out to other guys, and they were just bricking three after three. So he just said, second quarter, I'm going to go for everything, post everybody up and go to the rim. And he just looked dead, and I could just – you could see in his eyes, like, he was sort of deciding, do I want to even put the effort to win this game seven? Obviously, he did, but I thought for a minute he might just be like throwing the towel. Let's just make a little run, take an 8-point lead. They would have been able to really just kind of push the Cavs off.
Yeah, I totally agree. And he was finding cutters really well, which was something that was kind of frustrating. And I want to take a look at again because it seems like they were just losing guys on those cuts in the lane. But the post-doubling strategy was not working well, and they kept going to it, and the Cavs feasted on it.
So also another thing I think was a big problem. Sorry, I'm coming up with all these ideas. Is that they should have put Thad Young on Tristan Thompson because what was happening is they were double teaming LeBron and then Thompson would cut to the rim. But Thad Young was so good at cutting off that extra pass that he'd be the much better help defender.
I thought Thad should have been on LeBron.
So that's kind of works. But if you're going to play Bojan on LeBron, which is fine with, they then would bring turnover as the help defender. Because when LeBron got down, at least in the second quarter, and Turner is just not as low to the ground gravity-wise to make the cutoff pass and the bounce pass kind of steal. But Young is incredible at cutting off those passing lanes. I mean, that was like his thing all season was he deflected balls all over the place. Yeah. I thought that was kind of a problem because if you force LeBron in the pass, you can make the steal because Thad Young has the ability to do that. Instead, it was just Thompson ended up with dunks after dunk or layup after layup kind of. That was a problem, I thought.
Yeah.
But I could see how if you put Young on him too, it would have worked the same kind of way.
Just for a little more stonewall-y kind of guy and maybe get his hands up before the pass even comes out. But
I just think, no, I don't think even Thad Young couldn't stop LeBron in the second quarter. I mean, LeBron just wanted to score and he was going to score.
He was outstanding.
Yeah, and he's the best player in the world. And at the end of the day, this series stunk, but you lost to the best player in the world. I mean, it's
– best player ever, ever.
Okay, there's Jordan people out there. I don't want to –
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, we're not doing that debate. Should we go a little forward-looking for a few minutes and sort of end on a positive note?
Let's end on this positive note. If you go back to, I think, October 1st, probably, our season prediction episode.
31. I think I said 28 wins.
I said 28, and yeah, you were right around there, too. So that is our positive ending. They took the Cavs to 7. They won 40. They won 20 games more than I thought they would. It took one of the best players ever. Fine, I'll go back a little bit for you. To 7 games. They looked awesome while doing it. They have a ton of cap space coming up if they want to. They have a solid core for the future. There's a lot of good things to be happy about.
Okay, so my positive note was going to be the text you told me about before we got on this podcast.
Now, Adam, yeah.
So apparently Victor Oladipo texted his trainer 4:09 it says. So game ended, what, 3:30 probably? Maybe 3. He said, when do we start? I'm ready to take it to another level, which means he's ready. I mean, the most positive thing from this whole series was, yes, Vic had a not a great 2 or 3-game stretch, but the dude put up 30 points in a game 7 on the road. He is a legitimate superstar, one of the top guards in this league, maybe next, like, we'll put up again next year, will be talked about as, like, maybe in the class of Damian Lillard, Russell Westbrook kind of level. Maybe not quite Steph, but just the notch below level. And so that's exciting because part of the reason we said they win 30 games because they traded away a top 15 player for we thought were pennies on the dollar, and it's not. It was probably fair value now.
Yeah, yeah, it is way better than we ever thought. 30 points on 21 shots in an elimination game. An all-star looking like either an all-defense or all-NBA or both guard, most improved player. Yeah, they got something special in that dude.
No, and they also have two other young guys in Sabonis and Turner. Sabonis especially, who had a lot of good flashes in his playoff games, who are on the same timeline. This team has got a nice little core going. They got to figure out who to put around those guys. They got to maybe get another piece, but they have something. They're leaning towards something, and this is exciting because most teams who trade away the best player on their team, maybe the best player has been on their team in like the history of the franchise, don't ever recover the way the Pacers have in this quickly. I mean, they literally turned a team that won 42 games with a top 15 player into a 48 win team. That's what they did. That's incredible.
Right. It is. It really is. And we'll see how much they can build off of it next year, which is going to be such a huge testament to what this team does.
So ending question, and then we're going to do, I'll preview what we're going to do in the off season. You think the Pacers get close to 50 wins again next year? You think it's possible?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You think there's a little fire in this team coming out next year? For sure.
For sure. They are pissed they lost the first round.
I think they're going to fight for a top 3 seed. And I know Boston will be there and so will Toronto, but I think they can get the, especially if LeBron doesn't return, them, Philly, Boston, and Toronto will fight for those top 4 seeds next year.
Yeah. And there could be a surprise team, but that's looking like a good bet.
Yeah. Milwaukee, maybe. That's the sort of thought. Those are like the 5. You throw in the
coach who, like, you know, knows a thing about basketball.
Yeah. Also, they need to fix their roster. Their roster's not, they're not built around Giannis the right way.
The worst coach team in the league by a lot.
Yeah. All right. So I first want to say thank you to all people out there listening to this podcast. It's been a great year. It's been a great season. We've really grown this thing from basically, I would say, Tom Lewis, my boss, IndyCorners.com, did a nice job starting it, and then he took a break and gave it over to me and Tony. And we've, honestly, we haven't built from nothing, but it was from the very ground level, we built this thing up into something that we're pretty proud of, and we're pretty happy because people seem to like it, and we hear it all the time from people on Twitter about, you know, I skipped the pod on Friday because I didn't feel well, and I was getting texts and we're getting tweets, where's the pod? So it's like, it's exciting that people really enjoy listening to us, and it's really good to see, and it's exciting because that was kind of our goal, to build something that really would resonate in the Pacers world, and I'm glad it has. On that note, though, we are going to do lots of off-season pods. We're going to have one on Wednesday, probably after the exit interviews. We're going to do a mailbag Friday, so we'll send out some tweets and stuff like that to get people tweet us their questions. Feel free, anything you want. We prefer less off-season oriented questions and more big picture questions. We don't want to talk about quite free agency yet because we're going to do that later. Then we're going to do a really nice player series, kind of just talking about each player on the team and how they did this season and versus expectation and things like that. That's going to come out. And what'd you say?
We'll have some draft stuff mixed in.
Yeah, draft stuff and some weekly stuff, news, maybe do some NBA, some general NBA playoff stuff because, I don't know, I got to talk about something, right? And so, you know, we're just looking forward to all that. That's going to lead us into summer. And then obviously, hopefully we'll be back next year to do another year of the Locked On Pacers podcast. So as always, remember, you guys can follow us at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FreedmanAdam5 and Tony at Teased NBA. Thank you again, you guys, for all your support this year. Looking forward to the offseason. Now have a great rest of your day. You don't know.